Now it's time for our program, which is to share the book or quotation that either saved your or inspired your teaching or saved your sanity. And I'll be brief because I want everybody to have a lot of room here. I was an English professor. I taught at the State University and Community College, and we were allowed to teach our courses with special emphasis, even our composition courses. And I did one on environmental studies, and one year I chose a novel by Barbara Kingsolver. Are any of you familiar with her? She's just delightful. And this is a novel called Prodigal Summer, and it is set in Kentucky. And there are three couples involved. There are three stories. There's Lusa, who is the wife of a farmer there and an entomologist, an insect biologist, and her husband has just passed away very prematurely. It's tragic. She thinks she's going to leave. She ends up staying on the farm and adopting his sister's kids because his sister is ill with cancer. It's a very beautiful story. There's the story of Deanna, who is a coyote biologist and a ranger, and a little relationship that she has and a reuniting with her mother, and it's a story about her understanding of the ecology. And then there's an older couple, and the man's name is Garnett, and I can't remember the lady's name. And they start out feuding because he's an old-time farmer, a retired high school biologist, and she's an organic, you know, she won't spray her crops, and she just does all these things that drive him nuts. Well, they fall in love before the thing's over. So this is the book, but the book is structured in such a way that it's alternating chapters. So first you have a Lusa chapter, then you have a Deanna chapter, then you have a Garnett and his friend chapter, then you go back to Lusa, they go back and forth. Well, I had a number of students who weren't necessarily readers, and some of them had learning disabilities, and they got really upset. They said, "We can't follow this thing. You know, first we're here, then we're here, then we're here." I made an interesting discovery because of those students, which is that you can actually read that book several ways. You can read it chronologically, front to back, the way she wrote it, or you can go read all the Lusa sections, and then you can go read all the Garnett sections, and then you can go read all the Deanna sections. So I invited them to do that, and they loved the book. It turned them around, but it turned me around because I didn't know that she had done that. I thought, oh man, this woman's clever, right? Then there's how many of you know about the proverbial thesis statement? You know, you've got to have a thesis. Well, the students, you know, we were struggling to how do you have meaningful thesis statements? And I said, well, it always needs to be something that's a little interesting and that just doesn't summarize the plot. So I started a class one day and said, complete this sentence. Barbara Kingsolver's Prodigal Summer is a novel in which ... And they all came up with very, very different personal ideas that invited some provocation and proving. This is the book they all hated. And they worked together to help each other understand the book. They had these different reading methods. I would come in and they would be talking about it. And they ended up writing these papers. Some people wrote about, you know, biology. Some people wrote about the tobacco industry in Kentucky. Some people wrote about insects. Somebody got interested in child welfare just from reading this book. And it wasn't me. It was them. You know how a class catches fire sometimes? And they just connect. And when you have a semester like that, you pray it will never end, unlike the one where you wish it would end now. And so it was a wonderful experience, and that was longer than I should have gone with that. So I'm going to pass to my left.
Hi, I'm Steve Dresser, and I don't know if I could say that this book restored my sanity or made me the insane person that I've become. It was a book that I read back when I was in college. It's called Catch 22 by Joseph Heller. And I think what it did for me was it helped to hone my already well-developed sense of how absurd life can be. And that was probably a good thing at the time. I mean, there was certainly a lot of humor in that book. There was a lot of seriousness in that book. And at the time, it helped me kind of make sense of a world that wasn't making all that much sense to me. I eventually discovered, though, that I had to stop reading that book because I got to a point in my life where the absurdity quotient just kind of got too high. And, you know, if you read enough Catch-22, you will become immobilized and never leave your house. So what started out helping my sanity, eventually I kind of had to put the brakes on to keep what sanity was left. And so if there is any left at this point, it's probably because I stopped reading Catch-22.
I really only have a philosophy from one of the characters in a series of books. They were all about a woman named Claudia, and I can't remember who wrote those books. But Claudia married, and her husband had tuberculosis at a time when that was a death sentence, and her mother became ill and died of cancer. And her mother told her, remember that when you love people, you hold them close with open hands. And that have kind of made me mindful of the transcendence of life and the properties of compassion for other people and not trying to hold on to what's not really yours.
I'm Laura. I don't know. I do a lot of research every day. I'm online a lot. And the library thinks I should be reading more books. I'm not quite sure. I have such a busy schedule. Even though I'm retired, I don't know how I worked. And I have such a busy schedule. I've got projects I can't start because I don't have time. I'm not sure how to fit any more books in. Anybody got any ideas? I think that's all I have for right now. So I'm going to pass it on.
Hi, I'm Gilly. And I taught students with learning disabilities in an elementary school for 39 years. And trying to get them to read was really hard. But I found a book that several years in a row I had students that really loved it. And it was called Wayside School is Falling Down. And every chapter was just weird. And so, but my kids loved it because this one chapter, the kids refused to wear shoes. So every time we read the book, all the children took their shoes off and put their feet up on the desk. And we read, and I thought it was very successful. At least they were reading. And so I guess that's one of the books that I used when I was teaching that the kids loved. Wayside School is Falling Down.
Wayside.
I won't spoil the ending. The ending is really wonderful. I mean, it's the whole book is interesting.
I'm Brenda Uptain. Probably the book that sort of let me become more of a teacher who could just be free, and I was taught by fairly rigorous go-by-the-book teachers in elementary and high school, and this book was very freeing for me, and it was a book by Pat Conroy. You guys know Pat Conroy? I actually got to know Pat Conroy before he passed away. His wife, Sandra, maybe his third wife, possibly, was the sister of one of my best friends. But his first book was called The Water is Wide, and it was about his teaching experience on Yamacraw Island. And it just taught me that you can take children and take them where you find them and do what you can for them, no matter what. And it also taught me, I think it was later made into a movie, maybe called Conrack, after the name the children gave him. But it just gave me a sense of freedom that I could go in and meet children where I found them and do what I could for them, and that it was okay sometimes to buck the system a little bit. And that's been very meaningful for me.
Okay. I'm Tabitha Brecky, and I think I can't pick one book. I love books too much. But anyway, one book that helped me understand that it was fine, that I wasn't, well, I am, I've been told that I'm warped, but the book Gifts Differing by the Isabel Briggs Myers, and the Myers-Briggs personality, Gifts Differing, I'm an INFJ, and I finally figured out, okay, it's perfectly fine that I think that cocktail parties are like a sentence in hell. I'm not weird. And so that helped me in my teaching know that everybody can have their own way of preferring to interact and personality. But the other book that I like that's also kind of that whole thing of being read to, I remember being reading A Wrinkle in Time in fourth grade. And just that difference, yeah, that whole series is great too. I haven't seen the movie yet, but that whole thing of not having to conform and that how that can be binding and it's okay and those things. Anyway, so those are just two that, and I'm not sure exactly how that helps my teaching other than that letting everyone be who they are, hopefully. Anyway, passing this along to John.
Well, this is John Glass, and I actually don't have a book to mention, but I do have a line from a song that I think really kind of said it to me. You know, it's real easy a lot of times for us to compare ourselves with other people in terms of how well we're doing, how we measure up in certain areas, and that sort of thing. And Baz Luhrmann recorded a song to the graduating class of 1999, and many of you may remember this, and it's sort of a song that talks about, he's actually not singing, he's talking throughout the song. It was actually played at a college or university graduation. And one of the things that he said in this song was, he said, "The race is long, and in the end, it's only with yourself." And I think that makes a lot of sense.
Okay, I am Donna Brown from West Virginia. And I don't know if... Well, I would venture to say there's other people in the room that sort of think the way I do in some ways. You ever feel kind of like as a teacher, you're out on that island all by yourself? And yeah, and so I don't really have a book. I'm not really a reader. I'm like this active thing, and I can't sit still. And, you know, reading is... Anyway... But I have a couple of people in mind that really have some really neat quotes. John Wooden, the basketball coach, UCLA. He's not a teacher, but a coach is a teacher. He has all kinds of quotes that talk about teamwork. But the one that sticks out most with me is from Helen Keller, "Alone we can do so little, together we can do so much." And, you know, as a teacher, I've just had to, you know, really build relationships with peers and realize that I can't change the world. I can't change the world for these students. And it's a teamwork between teachers and students. So I kind of had to I think it's hard for us to really realize that, you know, we are invincible and we're not invincible. You know, that we can work together and with the students. And, you know, and of course now the philosophy is really students, you know, a flipped classroom is kind of the new term, and students should have more control over their teaching. And there's some good in that. It's not all good, but it's some good in that. So anyway, that's my spiel.
The book I love, and this is it's a negative, it's a downer, it's a wake-up call, but it's really changed the way I teach and spend my life. And I've been preaching on this book for a long time, but it's The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains by Nicholas G. Carr. And if in case you really want to read it, I think everybody in this room should read it. It's DB74072. And the premise of the book is that we are losing our capacity of concentration, contemplation, and reflection because advancing technology is changing our neural pathways. And just a few little things out of the book that really stuck with me. In chapter 2, he talks about that if a person is blind, the visual cortex is taken over the circuits used for audio processing. So, you know, the video cortex is taken over. And if a person learns to read Braille, it will develop for processing information delivered by the sense of touch. So they've done experiments where that region of the brain lights up, the visual cortex, when a blind person is reading Braille. So this suggests a question that I have. Do you think the use of electronic Braille affects how we process information? And I haven't answered that one. And the other question, of course, is what are we doing to our kids if we de-emphasize Braille? And then in Chapter 7, he talks about how the Internet diminishes our ability to know in depth a subject for ourselves. The web is not a technology of memory, but a technology of forgetting, you know, forgetfulness. And then, of course, our cell phones, we have numbers programmed in. We don't remember phone numbers anymore. I refuse to use the numbers, put numbers in my cell phone, except for my contacts that I really know, like home and places I need to call in a hurry, you know, home, school, and all that, which I have memorized anyhow. Because that is going to deteriorate your brain. If you don't use it, you lose it. And the question I have is, after reading this book, how will my behavior towards the Internet be affected? And I'll tell you how it is. It's affected me in the classroom, because before I was jumping on the latest and greatest technologies of everything and really agonizing because it wasn't accessible and I couldn't use it. But now I'm taking the approach, well, I'll use technology where appropriate, but it's one of many tools. And I try to give my students of all ages as much non-screen time as possible. And I think I'm doing them a bigger favor than any foreign language that I teach. You know, they get enough of that in other classes and other places. So I'm just going to end with a quote that he has. And it is that, this is from Dr. Nicholas Carr, as we come to rely on computers to mediate our understanding of the world, it is our own intelligence that flattens into artificial intelligence. And that scares the bejeebers out of me. So again, if anybody wants to read this book, and I think everybody should, I'll repeat the title and DB again. The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. And it's by Nicholas G. Carr, C-A-R-R, and it's DB74072. And I'm through. And that rhymes. And that's an accident.
This is Luann Williams. I don't really have a book, but there's a phrase I've kept in my heart all through my teaching years, and I've often shared it with others. Over my teaching years, I started having many more students who had multiple disabilities, severe multiple disabilities. Blindness was the least of their problems, and many times they were wheelchair-bound. I was determined they were out of that wheelchair when they were in my classroom and did plenty of activities for them, too. But the phrase that stuck with me and kept me going and to help others work with those types of students was, listen to the silence. I don't know how many times I heard other individuals say, well, these students are nonverbal. They can't move. They can't do anything. They're not going to have any responses. But if you listen to their silence, you will see those responses emerging on the, even it might be just a small task that you're helping them to acquire, but you will start to be able to listen to their silence. Even if you can put your hand on their arm, if you have vision problems yourself, and when you're giving them their activity, there might be just a slight movement, but you're listening to that, what that silence is trying to tell you. And you can start to understand each student and their needs. So if you ever have an instant of working with someone who has those types of disabilities, or even someone who doesn't have a disability, always remember just to listen to the silence and you can learn a lot. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is Pat Sheehan. Not being a teacher, well, I did do some teaching early on the computer side, particularly with disabled veterans, which was great. I think one of the things that I have learned, and particularly working and being around ACB, we do an awful lot of leadership training. I think an area that we haven't done as much training in, and what I hear a lot around in this group, is mentorship. Being able to, which is different from leadership, being able to sit with somebody, a small group, or maybe one-on-one, listen to what they have to say, listen to where they're coming from, and listening to their concerns, and understanding and accepting where they are. And then bringing them along and answering their questions and making them feel part of a whole. And I think that's one thing that I'm hearing from this group, whether it's the classroom or whatever the activity is, taking people where they are, accepting them for what gifts they have to offer, and imparting maybe some of the information that we have so that they feel not separate from, I don't care whether it's ACB or teachers or the classroom, but they feel part of a group, they feel included. And I think that's a tremendous gift, and this group has the patience, the wherewithal, the compassion to be able to do that, and I think that's a great gift. You guys deserve a lot of credit for that. Thank you.
Well, good morning again. I'm going to go a bit in a different direction. I also am, as I said, very passionate about Braille and literacy, and I think it's very important for children who are blind to have a good foundation of those basic skills. And the sad part is what I'm about to discuss is almost considered taboo by teachers that I have seen, say, at the Tennessee School for the Blind, some old and some new. But I think it's a basic skill that everyone needs, which is the slate and stylus. And a book that really made a difference in my teaching of Braille, because while I did daily living skills and some other things, I primarily did Braille, is a book that I don't even think is in print anymore. It was put out by Exceptional Teaching Aids by Phil Mangold, called Teaching the Braille Slate and Stylus. And I remember when I first discovered it, I'm reading it and I'm going, oh, wow, this is everything that I've thought of, but I never put it down on paper. And his approach, I felt, makes teaching the slate and stylus so easy and so understandable. And when I had students in Braille, my students were all adults, and the first thing I taught them once they knew the alphabet and the numbers and things like that, because, as I say, they were adults, then instead of teaching them to write with the Perkins Brailler, if they were able to do it, I first taught them to write with the slate and stylus, because they could start using Braille immediately. They could do things that were relevant, like make grocery lists and write down phone numbers, and y'all know all that stuff, so I won't go through the whole big list. Also, whether they used regular cell Braille or large cell Braille, and some of my students did have to use large cell because of, you know, problems feeling the regular size Braille, there was a slate that was available to them that was very inexpensive, very portable. Not everybody in the world can afford a note taker or can get one from rehab or whatever the case may be. So I think that, and do agree with the book, that the slate and stylus for a person who is blind is just as valuable as a pen or pencil is for a person who can see. So I'm a big advocate of the slate and stylus, in case you haven't figured that out already. And I loved that book. I don't know if there's a way to still get it. The last time I checked, though, as I say, it was out of print. Okay, she said if you look on the Hadley Resources page, she thinks that it's there. I hope it is. I'll have to check that out. So, but it's an excellent book, and it just makes the slate and stylus so understandable. And also the PEG slate from American Printing House for the Blind is a wonderful teaching aid when you're first trying to teach the slate and stylus to a person who is blind. So now I'll pass it on to Judy Jackson. I love this, the two J's, Jeannie Johnson and Judy Jackson. Here you go.
And in another day or so, I'm going to say I'm Jeannie, and she's going to say she's Judy, and y'all are going to figure. All right. I said, and in a couple of days, I'm going to say I'm Jeannie, and she's going to say she's Judy. And then when you call one of us, the right one's going to answer, and we're just going to confuse. Anyway, let's move on. This is such a neat activity. I just love this. I don't know who thought of it, but whoever did, you're a genius. So I'm going to go in a totally different direction. I am not a well-rounded reader. I've learned that this morning because I haven't heard of any of the books you all have talked about. But I'm looking forward to reading them. I read, I'm probably a pretty narrow-minded reader, good, bad, or indifferent. It's the truth. And I read a book, and it remains my favorite book of all times. I read a book called Though None Go With Me, and I don't know if any of you read any Christian fiction or not, but the author of this book was one of the authors of the Left Behind series, Jerry Jenkins. And I have, to date, not read another book that spoke to my life any more than this one did. It's called Though None Go With Me by Jerry B. Jenkins. And I'm going to tell you a little bit, and then because I guess I'm an overachiever, I even have a quote that I try to base my life by. But in this book, in Though None Go With Me, the main character is a woman who, a girl, actually. Her name is Elizabeth Grace. Isn't that a beautiful name? Elizabeth Grace Leroy is her name. Her father, it was set in the early 1900s, and her father was a physician. Her mother died in childbirth. And so Elizabeth and her father are very close. But one of the things her father has done in order to help him raise Elizabeth is to have his sister come and help. His sister has lost a husband and a daughter, and she's very embittered by these losses. And I think if we're honest, she's very jealous that Elizabeth has her father and they share such a deep, abiding love for one another. Well, it isn't long before Elizabeth finds out from her father, and I'm going to kind of digress and then go back and bring you in. Her father tells her that he is dying of cancer. He was a very poor doctor. He didn't have medication. He would trade chickens and things for treatment of other people, and he just failed to make the time to take care of himself. And so what has happened just before this, and this is something I wish I could be consistent in doing, Elizabeth is very involved in her church, and her father has always encouraged her to memorize scripture and to hide that scripture in her heart and to make it a part of the fabric of her being. And so she does, and so she has just before she hears this news, she has gone to a church service. Those of you that are familiar with church, she's been at a revival. And the pastor there challenges them to make their lives an experiment in obedience to God. And she decides that she's going to meet that challenge. And in this book, the first thing that she goes home and she's so excited, she wants to share with her dad. And Judy, of course, she does.
Excuse me, Judy, I feel so awful. We are really short on time. Can you get to the quote? There's other people who want to speak too, and we've got a break for business meeting. I feel so bad, but.
Okay. I can stop. Here you go.
you're wondering, we'll seek you out. Yeah. I'm sorry. Is there anybody else who wants to speak? Because we want to give you the opportunity.
This is Harvey Miller. A very quick thing. When we first moved to Brevard, it was a very small town. We had two restaurants and one nice grocery store. My wife went to the grocery store because she was preparing a party for some of the faculty and asked one of the clerks, would you please show me where the dip mix is located in the store? And, of course, he takes her over to the snuff counter. But so and so I decided to read a book about mountain people, and it was a Lee Smith book called Amazing Grace. I thought maybe I could learn something about mountain people. And unfortunately, it was not. It was about basically a religious group that used snakes for part of their worship. So but it was one of Lee Smith's first books, and she was a North Carolina writer, so that's why I chose that book. The book was called Amazing Grace.
This is Tom Moran. I'm not a teacher. I'm not going to share about a book. But looking back at my life, I just want to share with you teachers the importance of preparing and really doing your homework to be able to present. I owe what I did in my chose my profession to a physics teacher back in high school. He was so prepared, he had me spellbound. Strangely enough, his name was Father Strange. But anyway, all I'm saying is I love you teachers, because you know just remember there are students like me, and when you prepare and you do your job right, you know, you are sending some young man or woman off in life. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Carol. There was a book I read many years ago when I was, it was a dark part in my life, and it was Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. I had a senior moment there. Man's Search for Meaning. It was about his struggles during the Holocaust, being in prison. And I tell you that, he got through it by sheer perseverance and acceptance and just hope that someday his struggles would end. And there was one part in the story where he saw where the prison he was in, there was a little crack in the wall, and he could see a beam of light. I feel kind of awkward sharing that with you, but that every morning he could see the sun, and that just gave him hope that someday his struggles would be over, and they were, and he went on to write books about it and become a very famous person. And also, he didn't seem to be bitter about the struggles he went through, and that just impressed me so much, because at that time, the little things I was going through, I was becoming a bitter person. So it changed my attitude. Thanks.
Well, what a wonderful assembly of wisdom and information we have here. The good news is that we have recorded this meeting, and Steve took care to make sure that it's a really good recording. If we're lucky, won't know we're in a big room. And so this recording will be up on our website. Tabitha was over there taking notes. I've been taking notes. We can get it in the newsletter, so we all have a good reading list we can go on to. But I would just like to thank everyone again for being a part of this community this morning, and I value all of us so much and so deeply, and makes me just really, really love the work that we do.